This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers.
Hey everybody, it's Jessica, and today I want to do a solo episode that brings you up to date on two really big legal issues. The first is whether or not the President of the United States has the power to bomb Iran given the current circumstances. And the second issue is a quick update on where we are in the case of California Governor Newsom versus the Trump administration when it comes to the Trump administration's decision to federalize the National Guard. So first, let's begin with the legal issues, again, surrounding the president's power to bomb Iran. Let's start, as always, with the Constitution. So under Article 2, the president is the commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy of the United States. What does that mean? It means in general, and I want to emphasize that, in general, it gives the president the power to direct military forces and respond to emergencies. And so this is not a blank check. It means that the president can, we understand, engage in limited military actions without any prior authorization from Congress when we are responding to something like an imminent threat or a sudden attack. And we can go all the way back to the cases called the Prize Cases in 1863 for that proposition. Now, you're probably asking, what is a sudden attack? What is an imminent threat? Sudden attack, probably a clearer definition than imminent threat to U.S. personnel or interests. I will say, I'm going to flag here and I'll come back to it. There is no understanding, there is no bright line rule for what that means. Okay, so we just talked about Article 2. That's the part of the Constitution that gives the president certain powers. What about Article 1? Under Article 1, it's Congress that has the power to declare war. So under Article 1, it's only Congress that can authorize something that looks like a war in, quote, the constitutional sense. I'm going to flag again here. We don't have a bright line definition of exactly what this means. We understand that if the U.S. is to engage in some sort of large-scale sustained attack, sustained hostilities, that we would need congressional authorization. So we know that the fact that Congress has to declare war means that under the Constitution, there's power sharing, that the president cannot and should not unilaterally engage in a war. Again, in the constitutional sense, unless there is prior congressional approval. But it is the case, I have to tell you, that Congress, in my view, has ceded a lot of authority in this area. And Congress will, for instance, continue to provide funding. We know Congress has the power of the purse. Congress will continue to provide funding, even when, in my view, there are constitutionally questionable situations. Congress could decide to use its appropriations power, again, the power of the purse, to halt funding for military action. I just don't see it doing so, given where we are right now and given history and precedent. Okay, so that's the Constitution. We talked about Article 1, which addresses Congress. What about statutes? Well, back in 1973, Congress passed something called the War Powers Resolution. And this was enacted to create some sort of check on presidential war powers after the Vietnam War. But it's not clear if this particular resolution is in fact constitutional or if it actually infringes on a president's Article II powers. As far as I can see, there's no president that has ever said, yes, this limits my Article II powers, and no court, as far as I can see, has definitively enforced its key provisions. So what are its key provisions? Well, number one, the president has to notify Congress within 48 hours of introducing U.S. forces into hostilities or situations where hostilities are imminent. Number two, troop involvement is supposed to end within 60 days unless Congress authorizes continued action. So what we have in the past is a situation where generally a president will comply with the reporting requirements to Congress, but then dispute the second part, the idea that the troop involvement must end after 60 days, that time limit, will dispute whether or not that's constitutional. So again, the name of the game here is really Congress ceding, in my view, much of its constitutional authority and passing this war powers resolution, which I'm not completely sure is actually permissible under the Constitution. Okay, so let's keep moving. We talked about the war powers resolution. What about situations where there's congressional authorization for the use of military force? Well, we've had this in the past. Think back to 2001. Congress authorized force against those responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Think to 2002, Congress authorized the use of force in Iraq. And this has been this particular authorization for the use of military force in 2002. It's been invoked by presidents to include many situations. For instance, President Trump invoked this particular authorization in a 2020 strike on an Iranian general because he said this use of force extended to Iran because Iranian officials were present and active in Iraq. Now, I think the best conclusion is that Congress has not provided a specific authorization for the use of force against Iran under these particular situations. So we looked at the Constitution. We looked at congressional actions. What about history and precedent? Again, history indicates that this is an area where the president is increasingly taking power and Congress is increasingly ceding power. Presidents have ordered limited strikes without congressional approval in recent history. Think back to Libya in 2011, Syria in 2017 and 2018. And is there any sort of check on a president's power? Well, I'll say yes and no. I'm going to talk about this more in a moment, but courts generally avoid aggressively second-guessing military decisions unless there is a clear, screaming statutory or constitutional violation. So let's move on to the next question. What about the Office of Legal Counsel? Have they said anything in this area? Well, there was a 2018 Office of Legal Counsel memo and earlier memos which seem to conclude that the president can use force without congressional approval. And again, highlighting something I said before, when two things are present. One, when the use of force serves the national interest, that is really broad. We understand it to mean self-defense, maybe regional stability. And the action is limited in its scope, its nature, and its duration. Meaning, again, we're not rising to the level of a war in the constitutional sense. Here, again, we see a situation where we have a fairly clear understanding that the president has limited power, but we don't know exactly where those limits are. So we want to loop back again. Is there legal recourse? And again, the answer is kind of yes, kind of no. And I want to highlight two reasons. One is the political questions doctrine. Under the political questions doctrine, again, federal judges don't like second guessing a president's decision when it comes to whether or not hostilities are necessary. Presidents are elected by the country. Federal judges are not, and courts will often dismiss these types of challenges as the type of cases where they just shouldn't rule, meaning it's something called non-justiciable, and they're political questions, meaning they're questions left up to the political branches. The second issue here is that federal judges will often say that there's nobody who has the standing to walk into federal court and to sue. Meaning that federal judges will often say members of Congress or members of the military don't have the legal standing to challenge unauthorized military action. So where does this leave us? It leaves us in a situation where the precedent and practice is essentially that the president can engage in limited use of force, and we don't know exactly what limited means. We just know that it shouldn't jump this line and look like a war in the constitutional sense, which is another way of saying that even if the president is pushing the constitutional boundaries here, I'm not sure that there will be legal recourse for that. Okay, that's our first topic. Now I want to move on briefly to the situation of the president trying to federalize the National Guard in Los Angeles. We do have a ruling from the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit sided with the Trump administration and agreed to impose a stay, meaning a pause, of the trial court judge's decision to issue a temporary restraining order on the president, which means that the president's orders still stand. The trial court tried to block those orders. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals paused the trial court's attempt to do so. Now, what is the Ninth Circuit ruling based on? Well, number one, the Ninth Circuit said that when it comes to a president's decisions as to whether or not a president can invoke Title 10, Section 12406, that's the statute that allows presidents to federalize the National Guard, that is a question that federal judges can weigh in on, meaning a federal judge can review a president's decision as to whether or not the predicate facts are there. What do we mean by predicate facts? Is there a rebellion or a danger of a rebellion? Or more to the point, in our situation, is the president unable to execute federal laws with the regular forces? So the Ninth Circuit says, we can review a president's decision, but we have to be really deferential. That's part two. In determining whether or not the president really is unable to execute federal law through regular forces, we're not going to be very aggressive in our review. We're going to generally defer to a president's judgments in this area. And therefore, the Ninth Circuit was essentially convinced that the Trump administration was more likely than not to succeed in this case. There was also a procedural question as to whether or not the statutory requirement that orders be issued through the governor was really satisfied here. And the Ninth Circuit found that it was. And again, this is just a temporary ruling. It's not a final ruling on the merits of the case. And emphasizing that, I want to point to the fact that part of this case has gone back down to the trial court judge. That's Judge Breyer. Judge Breyer held a hearing on Friday, June 20th. And part of the question was basically, does he have any more power? Does he have jurisdiction over this case at all? And so what he said is he wants more briefing by Monday, June 23rd, on this question of whether or not he, as the district court judge, retains jurisdiction to modify or grant a new temporary restraining order regarding other claims that California made. Now, what are those claims? They're claims that the Trump administration violated the Posse Comitatus Act. We've talked about this act before. It essentially is a statute that says that military forces cannot be used to directly enforce domestic law on U.S. soil unless there's some sort of exception, like the president has invoked the Insurrection Act. At this point, the president has not yet invoked the Insurrection Act. So California is arguing that the National Guard is doing too much. They're not just serving in a supporting role, but they're actually directly enforcing domestic law, and therefore they're violating the Posse Comitatus Act. Breyer has not asked for briefing on whether or not that's the case. He's asking for briefing on whether or not he even can hear these claims. And so my guess is that he's going to say the Ninth Circuit's decision to stay, again, meaning pause his temporary restraining order, likely does not divest him of jurisdiction to modify his temporary restraining order when it comes to the Posse Comitatus Act accusations here. Now, that I think brings you up to date on where we are in the war powers, where we are in that Ninth Circuit case. As always, I hope that this helps you understand what's happening. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and we will bring you all the late breaking news as it comes.